finding pregnancy support you can trust is worth celebrating. Getting it on sale is worth belting Beyonce in your car. That's right. Ritual's Black Friday sale is on. Support your body's new nutrient needs with their clinically backed prenatal multivitamin. Or give back to your gut with Natal Biotic, a probiotic supplement for trying, pregnancy, and postpartum to support digestive, vaginal, and baby's immune health. At Ritual, quality is top priority. All of their supplements are clean, third-party tested for heavy metals, and 100% made traceable. Because you deserve high-quality support at every stage of your pregnancy journey. Cut prices without cutting corners and get their best savings on their best supplements with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pregnancy support. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hits the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews in it.
Boy, oh, boy, wow-wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
This is the Super Footy Podcast.
Welcome to the Round 12 edition of the Super Footy Podcast. My name's Lauren Wood. Each and every week we are joined by Herald Sun Chief Footy Writer Mark Robinson, Herald Sun's own John Anderson, and of course Brian BT Taylor. Boys, another big week of footy, wasn't it?
As Jack Dunn used to say,
You see him in, you see him out.
Thank you.
It was coach's El Chapo.
It was Jack, big on the field and it was big off the field and it was even bigger in the boardroom, wasn't it?
Craig, I was just trying to work out before how many coaches I've seen come and go. Since I started in the 1980s, and it's over 150.
I was thinking from the players' point of view, you know, a lot of young players there, what must they be thinking at Carlton? What were they thinking yesterday? And I sort of thought back to my days when coaches come and went through my career, and the young guys really are shocked, and it's like the end of the world for them on that particular day. The old guys sort of just go along because they've heard and seen it all before and know that everyone will be over it within 24 hours and we move on. So it's an interesting outlook from whether you're young or a more experienced player at a club when you have your coach sacked, someone who you think you're going to have your whole career with.
Well, you'd have to say that the Blues were the ugly of the good, bad and ugly of the round just gone. You say the young players were shocked there, Brian. Robbo, were you shocked by what played out on Monday?
No, was I shocked? I got told Sunday afternoon. I got told about 7:30, quarter past seven Sunday night. Just finished writing the tackle, thinking beauty. I watched the end of West Coast and Bulldogs. I get a text saying they think Bolton's gone tomorrow. And I said, oh, geez, okay. So I put calls into Mark Legutashay, chief executive, Kane Little, no answer. Rang someone else I know at Carlton, no answer. Rang Vanessa. Is it Gigliotti? Is that the pronunciation?
Is that generally the sign when no one answers?
And I'm thinking, and I couldn't write anything. I couldn't get any confirmation whatsoever. So I thought, I'll just ride this out. And lo and behold, next day, it's done. It wasn't a surprise. It was always coming. It was always coming. I thought Chris Judd in recent weeks, his support had wavered. They just started putting caveats on, well, if they keep losing, you know, we might have to do something. But the performance against Carlton, I described it halfway through the game, that this was the worst game of the year.
Margin was 40 points, but on a wet day with an Essendon side that lacked five of its top 10 players, that speaks to me. It's equivalent to the GWS debacle for Carlton. They had another one earlier. The game was at North Melbourne, I'm thinking. Yeah, so those three games were the final nails in the coffin. But Brendan Bolton will move on. He'll get back.
I thought it was handled well, though, wasn't it? Don't you reckon, from Carlton's point of view? I thought they did it pretty seamlessly, and it seemed that they had sort of Bolton partly on board, even though you could see him holding back what he really wanted to say.
But yeah, Budge, I thought they did it pretty well. He wasn't happy, okay? So when he was told on Monday morning and was called in, he was a very angry man. And that's I can guarantee you that. Part of it was the easy sell was the fact you've won one game this year and how many games? Four in 43 or something like that. There are other sides to it. Decision making comes down to selection at times, inconsistency in selection. Brendan Bolton came in talking about selection integrity, and there were some people who thought that wasn't always adhered to. Becomes hard when you're not winning games. You go back on selection integrity because you just try to win games. And that's the corner he was. He pushed himself into.
The president was on AW with us last Sunday and was really, really strong about supporting Brendan Bolton. Mark Lagoudache was the front man yesterday. I don't think he made the decision. The decision, I think, was made by, in my
opinion, I agree with that.
Kane Little and Chris Judd. Chris Judd's a football director. Mark Lagoudache puts people in to do their roles. And the role of football director is to liaise with Lloyd and the football department, and Kane Little's there.
Robbo, there are some people on that board at Carlton that have been there for the employment and sacking of three coaches now.
Well, Mark Lagoudache
is
one.
Well, he is. Yeah, he is one. You just mentioned what he said with you guys on 3AW last week, Robbo. If you did miss it, here's what he had to say.
When you've got a plan, Mark, you've got to stick to the plan. And if you start veering off the plan, you end up in a difficult situation.
The plan. It's almost capital T, capital P, isn't it? What is the plan?
Myself and Sam Edmund here in the office yesterday as the day was unfolding, we were talking and Sam is a Carlton person and he's actually excited. I think Carlton people are excited about who's next rather than it's sad to see him go. It's about,
do you reckon? This has been going on for 20 years. This has been going on for 20 years at this club.
It's been a
20 years.
A debacle of a century for Carlton, but I'm telling you, the Carlton people I know are thinking, right, who can we get? It's like a bad loss. You get to Monday, that's gone. What's coming up next weekend?
The plan is to develop young footballers. They brought a lot of them in. And what we've seen this year, the plan has been going like a busted because not enough of those young players have shown obvious signs.
They all can't be bust.
Watch them under another coaching group. But it's not just Brendan Bolton. There's development coaches under him that have to take responsibility.
Stephen Silvani?
I agree with you there, Andrew. I reckon when you look at the coaching structure they've got at Carlton, it's very immature. It doesn't rank with the top sort of 10 clubs in the competition in terms of depth of coaching they've got there, that's for sure.
When Tim Watson went to St Kilda all those years ago, he said the biggest mistake he made was not taking Robert Shaw with him. Robert Shaw had been a two-time coach of Fitzroy and Adelaide. And Tim said, I needed someone around me who had that experience. Brendan Bolton, I think, erred in not having brought in at least one really highly qualified assistant or development coach.
I actually think that Carlton, one of the biggest mistakes Brendan Bolton made as a coach was not to go after Luke Hodge. And Carlton sat on their hands and Brisbane's Chris Fagan, they both had relationships. Surely Fagan had a stronger relationship with Hodge than Bolton did. But the people at Carlton should have gone and got an on-field leader. And I agree with you about the off-field leadership. That's probably why they brought in Robert Walls. But they needed Luke Hodge to sit in the half-back line, like exactly what he's done for
There's not
for
many
Brisbane.
Players capable of doing what Hodge is doing with Brisbane. You can't say Isaac Smith. Isaac Smith may be that player, and he'll be looked at by those fledgling clubs. Gold Coast will look at Isaac Smith, whatever. But, I mean, Bob Murphy could have been someone. He might have got a year out of it. But is it really going to work? I mean, Hodge has just worked so well, but they're rare, that type of situation.
They don't have many players either. When you look at their 0 to 50 and even 50 to 100 games, they've got ample players in those two categories, but really they've got nothing between 1 and 200 games.
No, they haven't. Do you think, Brian, that Stephen Silvani should be put under the spotlight?
Yeah, absolutely I do. When you look at the players, particularly the recycled players that have come and gone from that club, he hasn't really nailed that many of them. You look at the last 3 or 4 years of their top three draft picks in the last 3 or 4 years. He's probably nailed one in each of the top three picks over the last 3 or 4 years. My information is that he's currently been doing a bit of looking around himself to see whether there's a job somewhere else. And I'm not sure whether that's 100% right or not, but that's what I'm hearing.
That's not what I'm getting. Having spoken with him recently, I think he's invested in Carlton and where they're going. He wants to see...
Well, he's hardly going to tell you, Ando, that he's perhaps looking, isn't he?
Well, I don't know who told you that he's looking around, but I'm with Ando here. I think Stephen Silvani is absolutely 100% invested because a lot of it's his baby. Now, he's escaping scrutiny. Sam Edmund wrote a fantastic article in yesterday's Herald Sun, and he just listed some of these names that were recruited: Daniel Gorringe, Liam Sumner, Billy Smets, Rhys Palmer, Aaron Mullett, Cam O'Shea, Matt Shaw, Jed Lamb, etc., etc., etc. Now, they were brought in for a reason. They were cheap. They didn't have to get much to get them, but they had so many holes on their list. Unfortunately, with the problems in the football department, not a lot of those fill-in players gave much value. The whole sort of
Matty Wright, probably the only one.
Matty Wright, and he got delisted. I was actually very surprised when he got delisted, Matty Wright. So Silvani, Lagudice, say the board, they all have to take responsibility. I don't think another club ever will strip their club back to what Carlton did three, four years ago. That will never happen again because the result of that hasn't been worthwhile, and there's no promise that it's going to be a raging success.
Yeah, and you're left with that void of players, whatever category it is, whether it's 0 to 50 or 150 to 200, you're going to be left with that bit of a hole. So,
but worse than that, BT, there's a whole generation of kids, parents who've got young boys, young girls who are sort of 5, 6, 7 and 8, and we're barracking for Carlton, They watch Carlton lose every week, and these kids are seeing Dustin Martin and all these specials going around at other clubs, and they say, no, we're barracking for Richmond. That happened to a mate of mine. It happened to a couple of mates of mine. They've lost Essendon through the drug saga, and Carlton now, they barrack for Collingwood, and they barrack for Richmond.
Well, my neighbour, you've met Willie and Peter, you coached him. His son was, I think, 10 or 11. We decided one night to burn his Richmond jumper. So it was a bit of a problem. The fire brigade was almost called.
Polyester blend would have.
What the heck are you doing? He said, you made me barrack for them. Oh. And this is the Tigers of 2014. Fortunately, he came back and got the premiership in 2017. Yeah.
Who did your kids are? I know your boys are Geelong.
Yeah, but they grew up at a time when Geelong was doing okay. So
BT,
it was easy for them.
I don't have any.
I've got four boys and they're evenly spread. Although the one that barracks for Richmond, and there's only one of them, he was wavering because he was the youngest of our four boys, and I've got to say, during that 20-30 year period, or particularly his 16 or 17 years, he was wavering all along. He was ready to jump off, but he just hung in there long enough to stay with the Tigers. So good on him.
So just go through quickly. Your four boys, who do they barrack for?
Essendon, one of them, Collingwood, two of them, and Richmond, the other one.
See, the poor Tiger, he would have copped plenty. That's brotherly ribbing. Yeah.
And who do you barrack for, BT?
Probably Collingwood, but no one in particular, I think. I've see so many games of footy these days, I don't think I really barrack for anyone. I tell you what I do get accused of a lot in my role now is I do barrack for the team coming second on the day.
No,
because as a commentator, you want a close finish.
That's not an accusation, that's the truth.
You can 100%. I want the team that's losing by 5 goals, I want them to get back and make it a close game.
Which is really interesting because when I watch a play, especially when you're a commentator, when you see a play, there's generally two sides, two people. You can take the negative or the positive. And if you're barracking for the underdog and he doesn't get a free kick, but the other guy does something really courageous and wins the ball, BT, you go for the guy who didn't get the free kick and often miss out on other things because people barrack in their commentating.
We love the underdog. We love it. Yeah. It's all part of the theatre. We'll go back to Carlton a little bit later on because we've got a couple of guests with us. Dennis Pagan's going to be joining us a little bit later and also Brad Hardy. So we'll be having a lot to talk about the Blues with those two. So we'll get back to that a little bit later on, boys. Just on the good out of the weekend, Frio. Wasn't that something out of the box? I mean, I was in China, so I was sort of checking in very, very sporadically whenever the VPN had kick in to make sure that the Twitter worked.
They had beaten GWS in New South Wales this year.
They certainly had. They like these big wins on the road, don't they?
That's a massive win. So, look, in terms of travel, they're the best side in the competition. And don't discount what Ross Lyon has done with the kids at Freo. Just go through the list, and there'll be two or three names there that most people don't know anything about. He is playing kids and he's getting the benefits. Mm. It's a very different Ross Lyon strategy.
He's also getting into the heads of Brad Hill and Michael Walters, who are playing unbelievable football. I think Brad Hill's a walk-up wing in the All-Australian. He's just such a dynamic in the way they all talk after the games.
What about Ricky Henderson and Mitch Duncan?
I would take Brad Hill ahead of Ricky Henderson. I think Mitch Duncan's having a ripper year.
Henderson ain't bad.
Henderson ain't bad, but no one grabs a ball like Brad Hill does and opens up opposition, BT.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. Walters has got to be in the running too, for all Australian, doesn't
he? He's in. He's that sort of... He's that sort
forward.
Of...
What
no,
about,
he's not...
He's so calm.
What about Gary Ablett?
they play that sort of high half forward role, which is now the half forward in the All-Australian. Like, I think Titch Edwards got named, 2 years ago, All-Australian. No, last year. Titch Edwards was last year All-Australian.
Yeah.
And I write every sixth week in the tackle. Elliot Yeo, who won the best and fairest in the best team of the competition, didn't get a game.
He should have.
Hey, just looking at the teams ahead as well, I've had a bit of a look at, the top sort of half dozen teams and just sort of quickly gone through the fixture and given them walk-up wins. So I haven't really given them the tight ones, but the walk-up wins. So Geelong on 10 wins at the moment. I reckon they'll win 18 games. Collingwood on 8 wins. I reckon they'll win 16. Richmond on 7 wins will win 14. So will... or West Coast on 8 wins, they'll win 16. And Brisbane on 7 wins, I reckon they'll end up with 14 as well. But I tell you what, have Geelong got a ripper run home?
What about GWS? You didn't mention them.
Yeah, you know why I didn't mention them? Because I'm not sure about them. I just think they're capable of winning every game at GWS. They're a really good side. And when I look down on my sheet here and I go, can they beat them? I just keep saying, yes, they can. They can beat everyone. But will they?
Cameron.
That's the thing I'm not sure about.
Finlayson, Himmelberg, Cameron. That's why they'll win games.
Well, unfortunate news about Lockie Whitfield.
How long's he out?
Our man. It looks like 4 to 6. He's going to have surgery on that collarbone.
You need to hear that after having something on him to win
the Brownlow
5 weeks
ago. I know, we love him
here.
So that's unfortunate. Other goods from the weekend, guys, of course, North and Reece Shaw. We predicted it here. The typical coach bounce back.
And Dylan Clark.
Dylan
Clark has to be right up there.
Dylan
Clark is a really modest young kid. Mm. But he was in a pub on Sunday night having a celebratory drink. And he walked up. My son served him, and Dylan Clark said, "Hey, have you seen Patrick Cripps around?"
So a good sense of humour.
No, he's a modest kid. Yeah.
Cameron Zerha is a good. I reckon he was great along with Nick Larkey.
Yeah,
and LDU.
LDU was fantastic.
Luke Davies Unity.
It was a great night. It was a really great night for football,
and
a really good piece on the Shaw family.
Good family, the Shaws.
They've been terrific football. There was a lot to like. Josh Jenkins at Adelaide was fantastic. At halftime, I thought, oh no, here we go. Tex Walker's going to get crucified this week. He is going to get murdered. But he had a better second half.
A lot to like. Unfortunately, we can't move on without covering the bad very, very quickly. I don't think there's anyone out there that would have liked to see that happen to Jaron Geary over in China. Of course,
you were there. You were there, Loz.
I was. Yeah, it was hot. The air was clear and the sun was hot.
Did you have the runs like everyone else?
I can confirm that I was not struck down, but there were many nervous faces around the team hotel. It was just a horror show for the Saints. Everything went wrong.
When Jaron Geary went down and he had that grimace on his face and you could tell he was screaming in pain. He's one of the toughest going around, Jaron Geary, and you thought straight away, there's something wrong.
He was in agony.
You spoke to him before the game. Everyone's accusing St Kilda of rushing him back. I don't think that's the case whatsoever. But being within the club, Lauren, how much do you think that smacked him in the face?
The match itself?
No, Jaron Geary.
Oh, massively. But the game was over by then. Is that what you mean?
The injury itself. The impact of, after the game.
Oh, the emotion. I mean, I know it wasn't the biggest crowd of all time, and there's all sorts of stories that go along with that, buses that went to the wrong ground, everything like that. But the energy that was sucked out of Zheng Wan Stadium the second that everyone realised, because it happened off the ball, and there is that moment where you sort of, we don't have the facilities that we do here, we don't have immediate replay screens, all that sort of thing at the ground, because it is essentially a pop-up facility for AFL. So there is that moment where you notice that a player's gone down and someone said, who's that down back there? And you look over and you see that shaved head and he's grabbing the leg. You didn't even have to him to turn around to see the number. We all went, it's Geary. The heart sunk. We saw Alan Richardson went. He left his post from the coach's box. He went down to the rooms. I think we've probably learnt more about Geary in the last year or two. I think when he was appointed captain, and he'd be the first to admit this, he's a no-fuss operator. When he was appointed, there were a lot of people that went, Jaron Geary. And even staff members at St Kilda now that have gone to the club and go, they even came in with that idea and gone, yeah, I'm really interested to see why this guy's the captain, because who is this bloke? You know, as I said, no-fuss character from Bendigo. He is so loved there. And, you know, not just by Alan Richardson, but by the wider playing group. So it's a huge loss for them. He'll be lucky to play again this season.
He's good, Loz, but why are we there? Why are we there? You know, bad food, sick, guys like Geary wake up in hospital with the threat of having to have surgery before they can get on the plane. I know he's all right, he's coming back, but that is always a possibility down the track. That's the last place I'd want to wake up in hospital. Why are we there? Why are we playing games there?
Money.
Money is basically the answer.
Yeah, but
can't we
just pay someone $500,000 to go and play another game in Alice Springs or something?
Well,
or Tassie? Somewhere.
It's one of those things, isn't it? I mean, there's an argument that maybe the sickness went over with them. Blake Akers set off. You walk through a temperature gauge, what's a temperature gauge at Shanghai Airport, testing for illness. Blake Akers set that off on the way in. He came in with the virus. No one at Port, from our understanding, fell sick. And St Kilda are adamant that there were stories about, you know, players heading to dumpling restaurants the night before they all fell ill. That, they're saying, was categorically incorrect.
Money.
It is a massive commercial opportunity, and seeing, you know, all the work that the Australian government's doing over there, the AFL, that's what it's about.
St Kilda were 5-5, Lauren. They were 5-5. Alan Richardson's career is riding on every win he can get. They must to have to go over there and do that. I mean, Damien Hardwick put his hand up and said, no. No more. We're not going to Cairns anymore.
Richmond.
That's it. We're going to.
They can do that.
We're going to start.
Richmond.
Yeah, I mean, they can, but gee,
they're $12 million in debt.
That's what I mean. It's not this. We're talking about Richmond, Collingwood. This is St Kilda. You know, Port have made great inroads over there, and you know they got well. Did they get a nice earn out of it in the end when they've had to fly two players over last minute business class and have all these?
No, 500.
About 500. Yeah.
You'll never convince me that it makes sense, even with the money.
I agree with you.
I'm with El Chepa.
Yeah, well, we will got to get to Dennis Pagan, so we'll move on. Well, Dennis, as we say, Carlton, North Melbourne, they've been the spotlight clubs over the last 10 days, and you know them both inside out. Where do you want to start, Carlton or North?
Yeah, what do you want me to talk about,
Lauren? Well, we've got caretaker coaches in place at both places. You know, you've been there, you know what it's like. How do you possibly approach the challenge at both of those clubs?
Well, I love the way Rhys Shaw started off, kept it simple, played a more direct brand of football, didn't overuse the ball, less uncontested possessions, and got the ball in a lot quicker. And people like who've been maligned in recent weeks, Mason Wood kicks four goals, Ben Brown gets it one-on-one. And I think probably too many of the young coaches now try to complicate things and plus ones and get someone free off at the back half stoppages and hang on to the ball and square it. You know, the key to success in Australian football is to do the basics well over and over again. And if you've got a simplified game plan and you get it in quickly and everyone's one-on-one, I can't see how you could be your key forwards can be crowded or outnumbered. And I, you know, come to the life and you think, why people want to have a plus one or want to have blokes sagging back just to congest and crowd the back line. Anyway, I've got to be careful what I say because I'm a silly old fool. But it was just so refreshing to watch the Kangaroos play the way they did last Friday night.
Now, you would have watched them this year, Dennis, and like a lot of people, you're thinking, God, where... Sometimes they got the effort, sometimes they haven't got the effort. Did you think that a change was needed?
I didn't probably think much about it. I don't think the full story's come out yet, and I think, you know, maybe it'll come out in the wash down the track. North was certainly mediocre at the time, and I 4 weeks ago, and looking at it 2 or 3 weeks ago, you couldn't see where the Kangaroos were going. But I'm not inside the club, and I don't know exactly what's going on or what the pros and cons. I've heard a lot of things since. But at the time, I didn't.
There's a lot of negatives.
Scoreboard's the only thing that matters.
Yeah, it does in football terms, but being in a football club and being in a big football club where you employ so many people and everyone is so invested, everyone has to be pulling in that one direction. Now, the coach is the head of the football and head of the football team. Had you heard that there was disenchantment at the actual football club?
Well, there were a few things that I didn't agree with. I'm not about to say what they are, and I don't know. I don't think you can be successful. I think you hit the nail on everyone's got to buy in. You've got to be invested. And everybody who works for your football club has got to be trying as hard as they possibly can to get their team a premiership. And that goes from the chairman to the CEO to the board to the coach to the football department people, the assistant coaches, and even all the admin. And if you're all on the same page, you give yourself some sort of chance. I know when I was at Carlton, there were splinter groups and factions and Chinese whispers. You just never had a chance. And, you know, players were aligning themselves with board members, or board members aligning themselves with senior players when things don't go right. And you can't be successful like that. It's a lesson that I don't think we've learned. I don't know what's going on at Carlton now, but still going the same way they were going 18 years ago.
Just as you were talking there, Dennis, I remember you gave me, was it a chip or not? I can't remember. I'll tell you the conversation. You overheard me say at a dinner that Dennis had lost the players, and you said, no, I didn't. No, I had the young players. And you just said then about some of the senior players aligning with other people, and that's what happens, splinter groups, and I think you summed it up perfectly. Your time at Carlton was tumultuous for a lot of reasons, but at the end, you honestly believed in you that you had the core of the young people wanting to play for you and wanting you to stay as coach.
Well, I can't say that categorically, because you don't know what everybody's thinking at the time. I know a lot of the senior players were disgruntled, and I sort of came in and been pretty firm in my approach with them, and they virtually, some of the senior players at Carlton had sort of on very good terms with the people who ran the place. And you got to remember, they're past heroes. My brief was to get rid of all the bad habits that have crept into the place, get the joint professional again. And at that time, there were a lot of senior players. Some were even playing in the reserves who were on very big money, you know. So it was always going to be tough. And, you know, I think of Malcolm Blight when he went to Adelaide. He got rid of a couple of his star players, or they were ushered out the door before he arrived. I went in there, and the first thing I did was challenge the older players. Well, that didn't go down too well. It had been their club, but they weren't going anywhere, and they were the oldest list and probably the highest paid.
Dennis, take us back to 93.
I sort of wanted to coach the reserves at North Melbourne. I didn't get the gig, so Kevin Schutte rang me, and I coached the reserves and was his assistant. Just had a wonderful 18 months at Essendon. And then I got the chance to apply for the North Melbourne job.
Can you remember who called you? Can you remember who called you? Can you remember the turn of events? You at home or at the club, at the Bombers?
Well, what actually happened was I was coaching Essendon Reserves, 93. It might have been the second last practice game. I was driving, actually got a phone call on the Wednesday. It might have been Mark Dawson. I think it was Mark Dawson, said, look, they want to interview you tomorrow. And I said, look, can we do it a bit later on? I want to give myself a good chance to prepare. They wanted me to come in there. Funnily enough, I had a presentation because I went through, spoke to Melbourne about coaching Melbourne some 4 or 5 months earlier, and Neil Baum got the job. And I had a lot of my notes, and a lot of my research was still pretty current and topical. Anyway, I got a guy, Michael O'Brien Catering, to his PA virtually stayed up most of the night, helped me prepare what I needed to do. And I remember going to a place in Grey Street, Brunswick, Peter Durash's old Eagle Lighting place, and the Northumberland directors there and interviewed me. And I just remember some famous advice or words late Ron Evans gave me. I remember after one of the Essendon games in 92, I said, how do you go in negotiation? Ron, what do? He said, well, I don't reckon you should be authoritarian or try and take control, but you want to be positive and you want to be, well, I won't say assertive, but you want to be able to sort of run it your way. And I said, well, what was your opening line? And he said, well, look, I always went into a room, people were chatting and that. We'd sit down and I'd be the first one to jump up and say, gentlemen, would you like me to open the batting? So that's the line I used with my interview with the North Melbourne Football Club in March 1993, might have been the 7th of March or 5th of March. Wow. And there was probably 10 board men there, and I sat down and I jumped up quickly out of my briefcase and I said, gentlemen, would you like me to open the batting? Nobody said anything. I just said, let me walk you through my presentation. I gave each one a dossier, spoke for an hour, and next day, I can remember driving home. I lived in Mooney Ponds, and I said to my wife, asked me, how do you reckon it went? And I said, oh, I thought it went okay. We didn't get a phone call the next day. And I remember saying to my wife, I think it was a Wednesday afternoon, Friday morning, I think I said to her, I don't think it went as well as I thought it did. And then Saturday morning I was preparing, I was coaching Essendon Reserves. We were playing a practice game against Footscray, or Western Bulldogs as they're known now, out at Skinner Reserve Sunshine, and got a phone call from Greg Miller. And he said, Dennis, you're new coach of the North Melbourne Football Club. I'd never even spoken money at that stage. I was just that excited. Anyway, I thought to myself, what do I do here? I'm ready to start a game. I held a pretty unique position. I had dual appointments, Essendon Reserves assistant coach and North Melbourne senior coach. So I started to coach the reserves. I couldn't see anybody else to take over. It was, probably 9:30, 10:00 in the morning. So I thought, you've got to be professional, just do what you have to do. And finished it off, and news broke loose at about, I reckon, half-time of that game. And I'll be very grateful to the Essendon board, Ron Evans, and those sorts of guys who supported me and gave me an opportunity when I looked like I was going nowhere.
It might be not news to you, but I didn't know that you went for the Melbourne job. And I think people listening to this podcast, a lot of Melbourne's people listening to this podcast would say, Dennis, oh, I think we made an error back there. And Barmy's a great football person. There's no doubt about that. But your success at the Kangaroos would probably say that Melbourne may have taken the wrong path there.
Yeah, it was an interesting, and I knew the night before I went for the interview, because Ron Joseph was the manager, and I heard that Neil Baum had got the job already, and I rang Ron and I said, look, let's cancel here. Neil Baum's got the job. He said, don't be stupid, you just go along. And he said, it'll be a great experience for you. He said, the people who pick football coaches, they're not experienced at it. They might do it once in their lives, two if they're lucky. And I was flabbergasted by the interview and some of the things that were said. And I walked out and being forever confident. I said to Hasse Mann, he shook hands with me. I said, Hasse, thanks for having me here. I really appreciate that. But I'll tell you one thing, son, you made a blue knot appointing me. And I just said all the best. And that was my time at Melbourne.
There you go.
Do you miss it, Dennis?
I did for a while, but I've got things on my mind now and other challenges. And I'm excited about life and want to do things. It's interesting when you coach for a long while and you have a time off, it's amazing how you can solidify your views and see things differently without any emotional pressure. And yet, I know it's probably a silly thing to say, but I haven't got any inclination to coach a football team now. I'd rather be a horse trainer, but anyway, that's another story. I just think you, with your knowledge and your experience, you're probably in a better position. But we live in an ageist society in Australia, and everyone thinks you're a dingbat once you turn 50 in Australia. I'm not going to argue against that. But I think if you keep fit and abreast of things and understand what's going on, the birth certificate doesn't mean anything. So it's interesting, the UK and Asia and Europe and that, football managers are a lot older. In the States, you know, some of them are 75 and still doing well.
Alarm goes off too early to be a horse trainer. I think you can have that.
Oh, well, mate, I get up early anyway. I go to bed early, so you get up early, Lauren.
What about the two blokes that have been plonked in charge, just to get your view on them? Obviously, Reece Shaw at North. Is there a number that can get him, you know, the concrete job, do you think?
Look, it's very hard. I just hope the Kangaroos go well. We certainly started off on the right foot, very positive, changed things around. You know, the kick-to-handball ratio changed dramatically. You know, they got the ball in a lot quicker, played a lot more direct.
No harder, Dennis.
I was really pleased with that. Eh?
No harder.
Certainly. Well, and that's probably the catalyst for it, for whatever tactic you employ. But, yeah. You know, why does that happen? I don't know. Everybody starts off fresh again. I don't think. And I hope Reece Shaw goes well, and I hope he continues to do what he's doing. But it's very hard to judge. Anybody, well, most people can coach if they've got any football now. So experience an assistant coach for, you know, 6 weeks, 10 weeks. It's when you've got to do it week in, week out, year in, year out. Experience, you know, success, experience failure, experience crisis, experience injuries, experience winning, experience losing. And if you experience all those situations, scenarios, 10 times, it just makes common sense that you're a much better coach than when you started. Mm. And I still remember David Parkin saying to you, coach for 5 years, all you're really doing is practicing on the players because you haven't had those experiences under the heat of battle. Mm. And when you do it for a long while, and I think you learn all the time. As John Kennedy, when I was coaching North Melbourne under 19s, and he was senior coach there, I can remember him saying clearly, if you live to 100, you'll still be learning things about life and football. And I agree with him 100%. You learn things all the time, and it's very important experience, understanding and know-how. And sure, you've got to have youthful enthusiasm and excitement, but it's a big melting pot. And I suppose what we all are today is a big melting pot of the influence of your parents, your teachers, people that you knock around with, people you read about, people you listen to. And if you've had a lot of experiences in a whole host of areas and it's all mixed up in a big melting pot, that's the sum total of who we are today. And, you know, as I get older, I think I've become better equipped to do a lot of things in life, not just football, but the more life experiences you have, the better you become as an individual.
Yeah, well, they've certainly been thrown into the fire and have had to hit the ground running, of course. There's no time to wait in footy, is there? It's week after week. So thank you so much for joining us. We know you're busy on the selling houses front, so we really appreciate it, Dennis. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Lauren.
Well, as we know, sacked coaches have been topical of late, and it was one of those sort of eerie football moments on Monday. It was 30 years to the exact day, 3rd of June, that the Brisbane Bears knocked off Carlton by 3 points at Princes Park. Robert Walls was removed as Carlton coach. 1985 Brownlow medalist Brad Hardy absolutely starred on that day. He joins us here on the Super Footy podcast. Brad, it was one of those sort of spooky things, wasn't it, on Monday?
Yeah, hi, Lauren. G'day, Robbo. Good to be with you. I wasn't at what I didn't know, actually, until someone reminded me yesterday. So it's a blue day, unfortunately, for coaches, particularly down at Princes Park or Icon Park now. I felt sorry for little Brendan, but, and I had no idea what was going to happen to Wallsy post that game.
Well, if you didn't kick bloody 9 goals, Brad, it wouldn't have happened.
I reckon it was 10, Robbo. I reckon they robbed me at one. I reckon Big Harry Madden, whose arms go up like giant tentacles, is, or something similar, as Jack Dyer used to say, might have touched one over the line. They needed the score review system back then. It should have been 10-1, I reckon.
We're talking to Brad Hardy. He's a multiple club best and fairest winner. What, South Fremantle, Bulldogs, was it Bears?
Yeah, been everywhere, mate. I sort of run up the Bears. Yeah, didn't quite get over the line.
Simpson medal. Simpson medal.
That was no mean feat. Yeah, two Simpsons and two Tassies. You know, obviously Charlie and other things along the way. So it's been a pretty good ride for me, particularly early. I started very young, Robbo, as you know, as a 16-year-old kid. I went through the Colts reserves in the league all in one season, and very fortunate to play in the Premiership in my 27th game. So it all happened very fast for me, and then I went into a little bit of a lull there. Lauren, for a while, I thought I was going to Richmond and they went for David Farm. I thought I was going to Geelong and they went for the president, Bruce Lindner, and then eventually Shane O'Sullivan came to me from the Bulldogs and said, you want to come and have a game for Footscray? And I said, are you sure?
Why, Brad? I mean, I think most people remember you. I'll be honest to you. People would say, geez, you're a great footballer. You're sometimes a controversial person. Why did you play at different clubs? Why couldn't you be a one-club player?
Oh, look, I started with South Fremantle in the junior area, and I played 118 games there, and then I got the opportunity to go to Footscray. I'd signed a three-year deal there, Robbo, and things were going along okay. You win your Brownlow in your first year. We make the prelim final. You're on the launching pad and think you're going to go somewhere. And in the second year, it sort of all fell apart on and off the field, to be honest.
Why, mate? How did
knee blown out by Shorey. I think at the time, I'm pretty sure that, Mick and I weren't getting on. And, a lot of it's about man management. And I was critical of his style and all of that sort of stuff. So, I was a bit of a... I was always taught to stand up for myself and my mates, and that's what I did. And the relationship broke down, as they can do it sometimes. And not everybody likes everybody in this world. And in the end, it was probably better off for me and the club and all the rest of the teammates there at the time that I left the building. And that's exactly what I did. And that's how I ended up playing at the Brisbane Bears.
Can you tell us a little bit about the relationship with Mick? Because there was, of course, the day where you took the jumper off and waved it at the coach's box. Was that sort of the culmination of it all?
Yeah, it was coming well before then, but, you get to a stage where, you reach a tipping point and that was it. We had two games to go, Lauren, and we were trying to get into the final five. I think it was in those days. We had to beat either Carlton at Waverley or Hawthorn at the Western Oval or the Witten Oval now, which is great. And, it just didn't materialise that way. And as I say, it sort of... A lot of people don't always get on in this life, and he had his philosophy, and I had my philosophies, and they never did the two meet really. And in the end, it was just a breakdown in communication. But as I say, I think, and I'm not being too dramatic about this, that the club did come to me and ask me if I wanted to get him removed, and I said no. I said that they said bring some of the other players with you, and I said no, it's not their fight, it's mine. So. I'm happy to stick my dogs up and look after myself. So in the end, it was a better result for me to leave, and that's what happened.
Wonderful player you were, Brad. Brownlow first year. I often say to people, Chris Johnson, I think, revolutionised back pocket play. I thought he was outstanding. Gavin Wanganeen before that, when you arrived, it was this person who arrived from South Fremantle and changed the way defenders played. And I reckon by the end, and I know you a little bit, by the end of your career, and even I want to ask you now, was your career what you thought it was going to be? Were you satisfied? Were you happy? Did you walk away feeling, I've just had the best time?
Yeah, I did. I mean, it didn't, when you say that, when you go back, and see, I really wasn't a back pocket player. It was the 84 State of Origin game, which convinced everybody that I was. If I look back and if I can be a little self-indulgent, Lauren, I've kicked over 500 goals in my career at South Fremantle. I'm in the AFL as it was. So, I sort of split my time. And it was just the fact that John Todd in that state game, Robbo, said Morris Rioli is the premier centreman in the country. along with Jeff Raines and Jimmy Buckley at the time. He can start in the middle. Brad, you start in the back pocket. If you want to change Morris, yell out. Brad, you come up.
And
Morris, you go back.
And he didn't yell out?
We went along swimmingly. He didn't yell. We didn't need to yell out, mate. We were going okay. So everybody watched me play that day and said, oh, this guy's a back pocket player. And that's where I played the first 2 years with the Bulldogs. And then I went up to Brisbane and I started the first 2 and a bit years there before they switched me forward in 89. And that's where the 9 goals came about. So I certainly was more of a utility player, I suppose. But I get a little bit miffed, Robbo, I've got to say, because I think people understate the Brisbane's end because, yes, it's very easy to be flippant and say the bad news bears. Well, we won 6 games, Lauren, in the first game, 7 in the second and 8 in the third. This team's not doing that now. And we're cobbled together by, you know, no draft concessions or anything like that.
It's come,
you know,
it was
almost like a dirty dozen mentality, you know what I mean?
So, well, clubs had to give two players to that, Brad.
Again, I've been self-indulgent, Robbo, but have a look at the numbers in 89. I kicked 54-47. I've had 100 shots at goal. You know, like if that would be – how would any one of the clubs want, you know, a forward pocket playing alongside Capper at the moment if you kick that sort of return? And even when Wolsey sacked me in the end of – he got me back in the end of 91. I was playing wing half forward, played 20 games, averaged 19 disposals, kicked 42-33. So – from that point of view, I think you tend to get understated a little bit when you're in the bottom side of the competition.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for making time for us. We'll chat to you soon.
Pleasure, Lauren. Thanks.
Well, the Super Footy podcast, of course, is brought to us by Tab. So it's time to check in with our friends there. If you are having a bet this weekend, make sure you do it responsibly. Jared Daffy, doesn't get much bigger than Friday night, does it? Tigers v Geelong at the MCG.
No, it doesn't, Lauren. And the matches I want to highlight, there's been money for all outsiders, oddly enough. Although I suppose when you look at the results this season, maybe I understand that. But the Tigers, there's been money for them. They've been 250 into 235, Geelong out to $1.60. It's a big, big game, you're quite right.
And what about, I mean, we'll talk about the flag a little bit later on. I still imagine that Geelong are top of the tree there. But Adelaide versus the Giants, that looms as a pretty big one, doesn't it?
It does, and I guess the jury's still out on Adelaide and GWS back in form with a couple of wins against hollow opposition, but there's been good money for you for the Crows. They've been 225 into 215 already. The Giants $1.70. We quite often find with the Giants when on the road, we're in the air, punters tend to drop off them. So maybe Adelaide might even start a little bit shorter there.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. And the Battle of the Birds, of course, Sydney versus the Eagles. How are we looking?
Well, Sydney have got a pretty decent record against the West Coast, and again, there's been money for them. They were 240 early in the week. They're into 220, so that's a pretty decent move there. We've got the Eagles out to $1.67, so some rather competitively priced matches, but as I said, money for each of those outsiders.
And we mentioned the flag just there, Geelong, of course. They're sitting pretty, 2 games clear at the top of the ladder. Where are things shaping up in the flag market this week?
Well, right now, they're $3.50. There's money for them this week. No money at all for Collingwood on the back of that defeat last week to Fremantle. They're out to $4. GWS are $5.50. The one side that does appear pretty good odds on face value, and, of course, the reigning premiers, West Coast. Been a bit of interest in them at $7 and Richmond at $9. And we did find one punter who's placed $2,000 on North Melbourne to win the flag this year. Not next year. This year
what?
At $151.
Well, they got the bounce back on the weekend under Reece Shore. I suppose we'll just have to wait and see if it happens again. But they're obviously pretty confident.
Yeah. You might have to wait for another year.
Potentially. What about the Brownlow as we turn towards the back end of the season?
Well, Cripps is still the favourite, $3.50 out to $4. But we saw what happened last week when he was double tagged, and you'd think that there's going to be plenty of more of that coming forward for Patrick Cripps. So he's $4, no takers this week. Nat Fyfe into equal favourite, second favourite, along with Tim Kelly and Lockie Neal, all at $5. Money for this week. This week has been for Fyfe and also for Lockie Neal. Dangerfield at $9. Brodie Grundy's got out a little bit to $11. Bond and Pally $13. And Stephen Caniglio into $15, and he's another one that's attracted a little bit of support this week. But punters betting against Cripps this week, money for both Fyfe and Lockie Neal at $5.
Yeah, interested to see if he gets the tag this weekend. Jared, been great to have you with us again from the Tab. Who are you backing this weekend? Make sure you do so responsibly. We'll catch you next week. Well, that's it for another edition of the Super Footy Podcast. We will be back same time, same place next week, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you rate, review, subscribe, all of the above, and send through your feedback on the Twitter machine. Fantastic to meet a couple of our listeners, boys, over in Shanghai. They're listening from Singapore every week. So a shout out to those Saints fans that I caught up with at Zhongguan Stadium. We'll see you at the footy.